Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on the Monday edition of Trumpet Radio Live. A lot to talk about today. Hillary Clinton, she had a bit of a health scare over the weekend. You might have seen that. We'll talk about that. If you've got a Samsung phone, you got to be careful because it could explode, apparently. And their stocks are plunging because of it. We'll have some details there. If you've ever used Dropbox to transfer data, chances are your data might be stolen. There's a new report on that. And anti-Semitism continues to rise, sadly. We've got some updates about that trend as well. All that and more on today's edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG, online, kpcg.fm. Live link there at thetrumpet.com. This is Trumpet Radio Live for Monday. Dwight Falk with you here today, Grant Turgeon as well. And Grant, do you find yourself more tired on a Monday after a weekend where the football season is going as opposed to the summertime?
Probably. Normally I would. I went for a run this morning, so I feel better. But yeah, normally my brain just feels dead Monday morning.
I'm doing this one fantasy football league, and one of my top receivers got his knee blown out yesterday.
No.
So I feel bad for him, but he should feel kind of bad for me, too, because he hurt my fantasy team.
He really
team.
Robbed you there.
He did, yeah. You always feel bad for players, you know, especially if they're coming off of an injury, and then they make it all the way back and all the rehab, and then first game, and they get hurt. So football's a rough game.
Yeah, they
it can happen.
Athletes actually sometimes tell stories of fans getting mad at them for getting injured. And they're like, "You hurt my fantasy team, bro.
Yeah.
I thought we were friends."
Yeah, that's right. It's always interesting watching a game in this time of fantasy football because people have divided loyalties. You know, they want one team to win, but they want the player and the other team to do well for the little fantasy team. So, there's a headline the other, I think it was on Friday, they said, "Will football be here in 20 years?" because of all the injuries. And so if something changes there, they're going to have to figure out a different fantasy. what are you going to, soccer, I guess? Do they have fantasy soccer?
They have fantasy pretty much every sport. I'm pretty sure rugby and cricket are also fantasy sports. I actually freed myself of fantasy football this year because I was tired of having, like you said, those conflicting loyalties.
Yeah.
My brother actually on Saturday night was asking me for advice of who to put in the lineup for his team. I said, "Don't even ask me. I don't want to think about it. I actually want to enjoy the game on TV and not have to be focused on my lineup."
You're retired.
I'm retired. Happy about it too.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of retired because I don't do anything with it. I put him in there and then I look at it on Monday and I'm like, "Oh, I lost again." So.
And you never used the board for trash talk when we were in the same league.
No.
That was always my favorite part. I didn't even like the rest of it.
All kinds of different ways to entertain yourself on a lazy Sunday afternoon. Of course, nowadays, football ends up being Thursday, Sunday, Monday, and a lot of
sometimes
other days.
Sometimes on Saturday at the end of the
yeah.
year.
Yeah, that's right. So there's a lot going on with all that stuff. One of the big stories over the weekend here, one of the headlines is, of course, what happened with Hillary Clinton. I think everybody saw the video. Doctors are saying that she has pneumonia. That's what they're claiming. Pneumonia is serious, but Clinton should bounce back. She had a diagnosis of pneumonia, they say. But they think she should recover from it soon. She's 68 years old, and of course, according to that video, or as we saw in the video, she left a 9/11 anniversary ceremony in New York after she became, quote, overheated and dehydrated, her doctor said, and then but came later. She went to her daughter's apartment, I guess, for a little while, and then came out later saying she feels great. But the videos got people a little bit nervous. There were some health questions anyway. And then seeing that, it was kind of a disturbing scene.
Right. It takes incredible health to be the president of the United States. You see them constantly traveling around the world and meeting with people and giving speeches. Donald Trump, on the other hand, seems like he has the stamina of a 20-year-old man, the way he just has energy all day long. And that's how people have even described him, having a town hall after meeting in another place across the country earlier in the day. It's just incredible how he just keeps on going.
Yeah, it's definitely true. You do need a lot of physical health and strength and stamina to do that job. There's pressure, there's stress. So it'll be interesting to see what happens here. This has been, they've been kind of trying to keep it quiet that she's had some health issues, of course, and then it was pretty visible yesterday. And it's hard to say, you know, if this is exactly what's going on or not, but that's what the reports are. In any event, they say she has pneumonia, so we'll see how that goes. They mentioned that she was dehydrated and had some was overheated, but it was only like 80 degrees, low 80s. I mean, it was pretty comfortable from what I read, so that seems a little strange too.
All the signs point to something a lot more serious that we're not being told about, because if it was something really serious and that's what they told us, then obviously people wouldn't trust her long term as the president.
So anyway, we'll see what happens. You can only kind of keep out of the public eye for so long. I mean, there's debates coming up and there are just people expect you to be out there campaigning. So we'll see what happens there. But interesting, that's one of the big headlines today and kind of an ongoing story that probably worth keeping an eye on. What happens if she, for some reason, can't run? VP steps up? Candidate steps up? Or
I think it's still even, it could even be, still be possible to pick another candidate. I'm
somebody
not
else.
Really sure.
Yeah.
But I remember actually during one of the Democratic debates, she left the stage for a long time to use the restroom, but they were saying later that she was having some sort of serious health issue at that time.
Yeah, well, there's a few people waiting in the wings, I suppose. I mean, there's some people out there. You got John Kerry, you've got Joe Biden and a few others, so who knows what will happen? It's going to be interesting. Kind of an unusual election cycle, though. I can't remember health ever coming up as a major issue. I'm sure it's been talked about if somebody was older, like President Reagan was older, but he was healthy. I don't remember anyone ever having serious health problems, you know, in an election process like this.
It's been a really long time, at least. I can't really remember either.
Yeah, so anyway, interesting to see how that goes. If you've got a Samsung phone, be careful. They say turn them off right away. Because they're bursting into flames. More than $14 billion wiped off Samsung shares as Note 7 crisis rages on. So it's the Note 7. So if you have a Note 7, they're saying it's pretty serious. Potentially, the battery explodes when it's charging and it bursts into flames. So that happened with a six-year-old boy in New York, and there's been a few. He's been the latest. He was playing with it, and the thing blew up, and it burned him. They had to take him to the hospital. They said the fire was strong enough to set off the smoke alarm in the building. So anyway, it's an interesting situation there. They've issued a recall of 2.5 million of their latest flagship phone on September 2nd, and it had only been released the previous month after 35 reports that lithium batteries were exploding while they were being charged. So that's not a good thing.
No, not at all. And that adds on to all the reports we've read about even just having an addiction to the screen and even young children getting addicted to the games. And now the phones literally explode.
Yeah.
So a lot of problems now.
Well, I bet there's probably going to be some lawsuits there. I mean, if you get burned by it, I'm sure somebody's going to raise a bit of a problem there. I'm sure they'll
make millions somehow, like it always happens here.
Probably so. But anyway, they're losing quite a bit just on their stocks. $14 billion wiped off the shares because of this situation. So time to sell all your Samsung shares. Or maybe it's time to buy. I don't know.
Yeah, because it couldn't get much worse than this. So maybe you'll improve if you buy some now.
Yeah, I mean, how do you advertise the next release for like the Note 8? They're like, this one doesn't explode.
That's probably all they need to hear. Just an assurance that they won't get hurt.
We promise not to burn you. You hate getting burned by smartphone deals. Literally.
Literally burned.
That's a terrible thing, though. I mean, and you can imagine, you know, we all, if you have a smartphone, you use it quite a bit. It's always around. But boy, if that happened, it could burn your house down. It could burn your kids. All kinds of problems. So pretty serious.
Yeah, and I've also heard stories recently of phone radiation killing sperm. So for men, you don't want to even keep the phone in your pocket. The problems just go on and on with these things.
I just, when you said that, I actually just looked to see where my phone was, and it's over.
Just keep it way over there. So I keep it up in my coat pocket now, just to be safe.
But they say you're not supposed to do that either because of your heart.
So. Oh, that's not good. just don't have a phone.
Where are you going to put it? I don't know. But anyway, so that's a bad deal for Samsung there. If you've ever used Dropbox, the data that you used, you might have been stolen. It's from the Washington Post. Hacked Dropbox data of 68 million users is now for sale on the dark web. Can I go buy my own back?
That's probably what a lot of people have to do.
They say that email and password data for more than 68 million Dropbox users is for sale on the darknet marketplace. I don't even know how to get there. Can somebody point me to the darknet?
The darknet.
The data set, they say, which is from a 2012 breach, includes users' email addresses as well as obscured passwords. The nearly 5 gigabytes of data represents one of the larger user credential leaks in recent years. Its price is reportedly being set at 2 bitcoins, which is the equivalent of about $1,141, which I didn't know that either. I'm learning about the bitcoin here. I mean, I've heard of them. I just didn't know what the value was. Mm-hmm. And don't have any. By a data trafficker on the darknet website, the real deal. So he's trying to sell this data. He's selling it pretty cheap, too. If he's selling, I don't know if I read this correctly, but if he's selling all of it for that much, it seems like that's kind of a cheap sale.
Well, he's a benevolent thief, then.
I don't know. I don't know what that stuff goes for. I don't know what they would typically do with that. But anyway, it's just another example of the danger that's out there. I mean, I've used Dropbox before. It's a convenient way to transfer files, but data is being stolen. And I kind of wonder sometimes. Actually, over the weekend, I was wondering about it because all of a sudden I started getting all these crazy emails about, you know, just junk emails, more than normal. And I just thought, I wonder if somebody got a hold of my email address somehow. I'm sure they did. It's not like it's hard to do that. But, you know, somebody must have sold it because all of a sudden I'm getting these repeated emails that I didn't get before. So, yeah, that information is out there. Dropbox announces 4-year-old breach last week when it sent out an email to affected users, informing them that they would be proactively resetting their passwords. Even there, you have to be careful because sometimes you'll get an email saying, hey, you need to reset your password, and that's the scam.
Right.
So you have to kind of look out, make sure you take a look at that URL. Where is it sending you? Because it can be like, you know, eBay or something, but then it's got something else in the URL mm-hmm. that's not accurate. So anyway, if you use Dropbox, you might want to be careful, on the lookout in case your data was in fact stolen. And this happened again in 2012, and so the info about it's just coming out now.
Oh wow.
which is not good. Anyway, Dropbox, if you've used it, you have to be careful. There is a report that's out here that they did a survey recently. Which U.S. college has the happiest students? And I've got the top 10 list for you. The happiest students, and they base this on a few things, of course, and these are the major universities. So we're broadcasting from the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College. We were not surveyed in this for some reason.
Oh, robbery. We would have easily taken top spot.
I think so. You could have talked to every student because there's not thousands upon thousands. But here we go. These are the top 10 happiest students, they say, at U.S. colleges. Number 10 is Claremont McKenna College. I'm not familiar with that one. A lot of these, well, some of them I'm not familiar with. Number 9 is Colby College. I'm not sure where that is. Number 8 is University of California, Santa Barbara. Well, they're out there by the beach. Of course you'd be happy out there. Beautiful.
Yeah, for sure. Surfing all day. Hopefully some fish and chips. That's my favorite.
Those are the two main classes, surfing and fish and chips. Something about math in there, too. I don't know. Number 7, they say the happiest students are at Virginia Tech, which is interesting. Number 6, Kansas State University. 5, University of Iowa. Number 4, Auburn University. Number 3, University of Dayton. Number 2, Vanderbilt University. And number 1, they say Rice University. Those are the 10 colleges that apparently have the happiest students. But again, we were not surveyed. Ugh. I guess you need to have a certain amount of us students.
I'm disgusted.
Yeah, well, you're being triggered by the lack of inclusion on this list.
Where's the diversity?
Yeah, that's a good question. But so anyway, it's kind of interesting. There's a story today, too, about in China, I believe it is, the college is setting up love tents, which sounds a little weird, but apparently what it is for when the freshmen come to school, parents or relatives can stay in these tents for a while to kind of ease the transition. So
they could just set up a profitable bed and breakfast right next to the college. Yeah. That would work out pretty well, and they wouldn't have to stay in tents.
But they're setting these up to help the transition for the freshmen. Which, of course, every college freshman, that's what you want. You want to have your mom and dad right there.
Well, some really do. I'm pretty sure most don't.
Most probably don't. They're like, okay, give me a little bit of space here.
Embarrassing me in front of all my friends.
Yeah, mom and dad are over there in the love tent, so I'll be joining them for lunch. Interesting. Here's a story that's just bizarre. This is from the Of Course This Happened segment. This is a real headline. Police said an intoxicated woman crashed funeral and attempted to get the body out of the casket. This is from Tennessee. What's going on in Tennessee? What's happening down there? There's too many problems in Tennessee. The house being bulldozed last week, and now this is going on. They say it's one thing to crash a party. It's quite another to crash a funeral. And, well, it's something else entirely to attempt to remove a body from a coffin in front of aghast family members. I mean, it's not funny, but yet it is. Police in Columbia, Tennessee. So that's exactly what this lady did, 36-year-old lady who shall remain nameless. It was a memorial service, and her trouble began before she even arrived at the memorial service, police said. She sideswiped multiple parked vehicles from behind the wheel of a red pickup truck. Police were talking to the owner of one of the damaged vehicles when a call from dispatch arrived, informing officers that the action had moved to the funeral home. Same lady. She sideswiped cars, got out of the truck, went into the funeral home. And they say, and this is where things started to get strange. A witness would later tell police that she showed up at the funeral home as they were actively having a funeral and walked up to the open casket. At that point, she began grabbing the body inside of the casket. At one point, attempted to get the body out of the casket. And she doesn't know these people. It wasn't like relatives, or it was just some random woman that came into the. Unless the guy that died had, you know, more to his life story than we know. But something going on here. Of course, they didn't say it was a guy either. It was just a body in the casket there. But she has a. Here is her excuse. She, and this is an exact quote. She said, when they got down here, they say I was driving a truck and hit two cars, and they said I was driving on a revoked license. They tried to say drug paraphernalia and disorderly of a funeral service, and I haven't done anything.
Not a thing.
They've got footage of her doing it, so I think that won't stand up in court. She, of course, was intoxicated. From a variety of things and just doing some strange stuff. So just bizarre. Can you imagine that? Just being there at a funeral and all of a sudden this person comes in and just starts attacking the casket and taking the person out. You'd think like, wow, like did he owe you money or like what? You need something that didn't get settled before he died or
the
what?
The feud goes beyond death in this case.
Yeah, so just really strange. So obviously there was a drug problem involved there, and not funny if you're the people there at the funeral. It'd be pretty pretty shocking, but being taking a wide look at it, it's a little humorous, I suppose, in some way. So of course that happened down there in or over there in Tennessee. Got to be careful. You never know what's going to happen anywhere.
Well, yeah, that should be a lesson to everyone to just keep control of their senses. People just lose their minds going on drugs or alcohol or whatever it is and then don't even remember what happened.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting reading the comments, too, because people were, of course, a little bit lighthearted, I guess, about it, a little tongue-in-cheek, but some were saying, like, I'm putting this in my will that this has to happen at my funeral or else no one's getting any money. So, and then somebody wrote that the Ayatollah, one of the Ayatollah's funerals, they were passing the body around and they dropped him and he fell. I don't know if that happened or not, but they do all kinds of different things at funerals. So anyway, I've been to a fair number, but I've never seen anything like that, thankfully.
No, they're usually somber occasions and people console each other and then go home and you don't really remember too much else.
Yeah. You'd have to almost have, I guess, security of some kind to get up there and stop what was happening. But
yeah, I wonder if anyone actually did stop her right away or if they were all just in shock that someone would dare do such a thing.
Yeah, really strange situation there. So one of the stranger headlines from today, the Key of David program's coming up here in a bit on KPCG. one of the programs today is on Britain Leaves the EU, which of course happened a while back, but is really good to listen to that program. And because that was talked about for so long that that would happen. Herbert Armstrong talked about that for years. And so it is really good to go back and to see, remember what happened there and look forward to what is happening because of that. In relation to it, it's a good program for today because the former UK PM David Cameron, he quit or resigned from Parliament. So that just happened today.
Wow.
So that's kind of a breaking news. He, of course, he quit the top office there after the Brexit vote. Now he left Parliament. So that's kind of a developing thing right now, too.
So he's just done totally as a public figure then.
Apparently. So unless he's got something else up his sleeve, but that's the headline there. So that ties in with the Key of David program today, and make sure you do listen for that here on KPCG. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. That's coming up in a little bit as well. He takes a look back at 9/11 and notes that how for a time after the attacks, America was unified racially, politically. Everyone was on the same page. We were also allied, or with our allies, unified with them at that time, the UK and Israel especially. And we all did kind of stand together for a little bit of time there. And I was even watching a documentary, I think it was on a Friday, just about the attacks. And they had footage of the crowd kind of observing what was happening. And one thing I did notice was how everyone was getting along, I guess. I mean, they were all focused on this horrible event, but every kind of race, every kind of ethnicity, but everybody was together as one looking at this event. And then you think about today, and it's pointed out on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, how divided we are, you know, racially and every other way. And it's only 15 years on from that event.
On 9/11, everyone was an American first, at least. And now that seems to have changed where someone's race or someone's religions or political beliefs take precedence over being an American.
Yeah, so that's a really good Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Good to look back over these last 15 years and to see what's happened since that attack. And as we were talking about even Grant on Friday, I mean, things haven't gotten better since that time. And then, of course, yesterday with the NFL games, you know, you got teams protesting, players protesting, just nonsense.
Just the gall to do that on 9/11 as well. A bunch of players kneeling, one guy putting his fist up in the air like a Black Power salute.
Yeah.
And then I think a couple whole teams just joined arms. They locked arms together. All these social justice warriors out there just trying to crusade for a cause that actually is a lie, to act like certain people here are being oppressed when that really isn't true.
Yeah, really selfish, I think. I mean, even if they've got some really strong opinion on it, yeah, you can. There are places you can express that, but on a football field, you know, at a time of honoring or remembering, I guess, the tragic event and honoring the first responders and some of those victims, that's just selfish.
Yeah, it is.
Just should have left it alone, I think. But it's a really good Trumpet Daily Radio Show today, taking a look back here at 9/11 and some of the things that have happened since. So make sure you listen for that. And if you can't catch it live, you can find the archives online at kpcg.fm. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, take a look at some more anti-Semitism. It's on the rise. Pretty shocking. Trumpet Radio Live.
We'll be right back to Trumpet Radio Live.
I'm Ryan Malone, concert manager at Armstrong Auditorium and host of Music for Life, and I invite you to join me for a special episode this week as I introduce you to the season opener at Armstrong Auditorium, The Step Crew. This will be the first episode of our pre-concert talks, which will prepare our audiences for this powerful troupe's upcoming performance. We will have a phone interview with Ottawa Valley step dancer and lead fiddler for the group, John Polatsky.
The one word that I can promise is energy. The show just exudes energy from the minute the curtain goes up to the minute it comes down.
John also talks about why he's excited to return to Armstrong.
Edmund is a little bit of a second home for us. They're one of the best audiences we've ever performed for.
So join me for our first pre-concert talk as we discuss the Step Crew and their September 15th program at Armstrong.
This Monday at 4 p.m. Central on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. This is Trumpet Radio Live. If you would like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at KPCGFM, and we send out some programming tweets. And if you'd like to email us, you can do that. Send your emails to comments@kpcg.fm. We're happy to take a look at those for you. You could be the first to send in a recipe. No one's ever sent us a recipe yet.
Something we've never asked for. Well, actually, have we? I think we have.
Never directly. But every once in a while, I throw that out there. Like, well, nobody ever sent a recipe in.
Maybe send in some new challenges, since I've already tried the Whopperito.
Yeah.
And I'm probably, or my wife's probably going to try that triple challenge.
Oh, really? Well, you know what's really interesting? Yesterday, I was watching television. I was watching a football game. They had a commercial come on for Burger King. And the king was staring at the Cheeto guy. Chester the Cheeto, whatever his name was.
They put them both in the same commercial?
Yeah, staring at each other.
Ooh.
And then, you know, kind of like they're having a showdown. And then the king puts forward the chicken fries, I think it was. Or maybe I got it reversed. I think the Cheeto guy, he put forward the Cheetos, that the king put forward the chicken fries. And they didn't quite tell you what was going to happen, but these two are coming together in some way. So the chicken fries and the Cheetos are going to unite.
Wow.
So there's another thing that's coming your way.
I have to do that. Absolutely.
I would assume they would just put the Cheeto like stuff around the chicken.
Probably.
I mean, that would make the most sense. But we'll see.
Know. Maybe inject the chicken with Cheeto flavoring.
Chicken flavored Cheetos?
Oh,
Cheeto flavored chicken? I don't know. There's things are happening. Burger King's just, they're taking it to the next level. So I'm not sure what level that is, but that's where they're heading.
It's terrifying.
So, yeah. For a minute there, I thought the king and the cheetah were going to fight, but
which would be a better commercial.
Yeah. But so, anyway, there's more stuff coming, more culinary delights to satiate your taste buds. I did use the word satiate.
Good word.
Thank you.
Was that tier three? Possibly.
Maybe. We've got some interesting stories here about some of the things going on, more serious things in the world. Before we get to that, though, you've heard, of course, of the selfies. People take pictures of themselves. By the way, that reminds me, I was at the park just a day or two ago with the family, taking a little stroll, and I saw a teenager-ish girl sitting at a park bench by herself. Everything's happening around her, walking, swinging, etc. And she has a phone. She's taking like a video of herself. And she looked like she was trying to rap, like along with the song, and take a video of herself as the world happened around her. And my wife and I were just like, wow, how is she not like embarrassed by that? You know, she's acting like a crazy person over there. And I thought, what a world. Like, how would you explain this to somebody that, you know, 30 years ago? Like, yeah, people will go outside to a park, but they will ignore everything that's happening around them, and they will take a video of themselves either singing or rapping to some sort of a song. And she was making the gestures and the hand movements and the whole thing. Just strange.
I actually saw a commercial a lot like that. There was actually a Muslim woman in a headdress, and she was like singing out loud to this hip-hop song while she was walking through this school, and all the people were turning and looking at her. And, yeah, she looks very foolish. And, again, she's an apostate Muslim. She must be. I mean,
yeah.
She's getting herself in some trouble there.
Yeah, that wouldn't be something they would normally do, I don't think. But so, anyway, selfies are very popular. People like to take pictures of themselves. The most dangerous places to take selfies in the world. Here we go. This is a list from Extreme Travel. I didn't know you could extreme travel, but you can. I guess that'd be anything. That'd be like business class or below. That's extreme travel. I've extreme traveled. How would you like to be jammed into a carton flying across the hemispheres? So most dangerous places to take selfies in the world. Number one is the Triana Bridge in Seville, Spain. They say unless you're bungee jumping, have strong cords, and a leg harness strapped around you, hanging or standing on the railings of a bridge is dangerous. In 2014, a 24-year-old Polish college student lost her balance while posing for a picture with the bridge in the background something in the background. I guess she was on the bridge. She fell 23 feet onto a narrow concrete path below.
Oh.
So these are examples of where people have tried to take these selfies and they've fallen and gotten hurt or sometimes killed, I think. Number two is Cabo de Roca Cliff. A Polish couple was killed after they tried to take a selfie on the cliff in Portugal. They fell hundreds of feet, and their kids witnessed the incident. Oh, man. The parents crossed a barrier to take a selfie together near the 450-feet-high edge, according to the media, but the duo slipped and plummeted off the beachfront cliff.
Did you just say both of those first two examples were Polish, too?
Yes. Wow. Well, no, I take that back. The first one was a Polish college student.
Okay.
But in this case, this other one here was in, it was a Polish couple.
They were just in different places, but they were both Polish?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That's odd.
Yeah, they went past the barrier. They always put up, like, hey, don't go past this for your own protection. Not in this case. So they took their selfie and that's terrible in front of the kids, too.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it.
No.
It's a cool picture, but.
Maybe that's why they actually invented the selfie stick. I always thought it was kind of a lame invention, but if you can get a better picture of yourself and the background that you have there, maybe that's actually why it was made, so you don't strain too much.
Yeah, I would not be good. I would not do this because anytime I get close to the edge of something, I get all nervous and stuff.
I hate that. It's the worst.
I can't do that. Number three, this is a very general one, but on tracks and trains. People do this. Stopping on an active train track is never a good idea, no matter where you are in the world. A 21-year-old man died from electrocution after climbing on top of a train to take a selfie with friends.
What?
Several similar accidents have been reported over the last 2 years as daredevils seek out the perfect snap. So it's kind of like a contest so you can get the most extreme snap. And in some cases, people are getting killed. So just like anything, it can be taken too far. This one's surprising. Taj Mahal, that's number four. In 2015, a Japanese tourist died after allegedly slipping down the stairs at India's famed Taj Mahal. The man fell while taking a selfie at the palace's royal gate. So that's one that I wouldn't think of as much, but I guess you could fall just about anywhere. Wow. The last one here is Plitvice Lakes National Park, if I said that correctly, in Croatia. A 20-year-old Canadian tourist fell 246 feet off of a viewpoint in the park while trying to take a selfie. Survived it, though, because tree branches broke his fall, but probably still not a good experience. They have a sign up there that says, "Dear tourists, we respect you. It's time for you to start respecting yourselves, so stop making stupid and dangerous selfies. Thank you." That's what's at the park. They have a sign there. Start respecting yourselves. So anyway, be careful. Don't do that. You know, it's not worth it.
No. The selfies in general, not really worth it.
Who wants to see more pictures of me? We're all looking at you. We don't need to see more pictures of you. These are some disturbing stories here, Grant, that you've got. And we talked about this a little bit on Friday. And this just continues to happen. Anti-Semitism is on the rise. You have two headlines here. The first one is from IsraelNationalNews.com. Netanyahu lashes back at Dutch MP snub. I guess he wouldn't shake his hand, which is unbelievable. And then the LA Times has one. U.S. slams Netanyahu after he equates opposition to Israeli settlements with ethnic cleansing.
Yeah, some crazy stories. And it just shows you, even in 2016, even in the 21st century, hatred for the Jews has not died yet and it probably never will. It says here in this Eretz Sheva Times or Eretz Sheva piece that Prime Minister Netanyahu struck back after Dutch Parliament member Tuna Han Kuzu refused to shake his hand earlier today. So this is a Dutch member of Parliament, but he's actually Turkish born. That could explain some of the hostility there. Benjamin Netanyahu was making a trip over to the Netherlands and Kuzu refused to shake his hand, and he was wearing a button that had the Palestinian Liberation Organization flag on it.
Wow.
So he wouldn't shake his hand and had this terrorist group's flag on his pin, on his jacket.
It's got to be really tough to be Benjamin Netanyahu or any of those Israeli leaders because you're going into places and you're getting the cold shoulder everywhere. Based upon really just the fact that you're Jewish. Now, they would say, I'm sure, well, they don't like the things they're doing over there with the Palestinians. Apparently, that's what this PM was kind of upset about. But that doesn't hold water in terms of fact. They're not doing anything other than trying to protect themselves, have a peaceful life on their homeland. So that would just be difficult for the leadership there.
Yeah, the people are just really hateful toward the Jews, and it's hard to really explain it without understanding maybe a darker spiritual force behind that, because what are the Jews really doing besides defending themselves? This member of parliament, this Dutch member of parliament, said on his Facebook page, I believe, "While the streets of Gaza were reddened by blood that splashed out of the veins of children in the summer of 2014, the red carpet is rolled out here. That deserves no handshake but a reference to free Palestine." Oh. So just a ridiculous statement here. And the article has just this knockout final paragraph to just destroy the Dutch member of parliament. It says, "Kuzu made no mention of the thousands of lethal rockets and missiles launched from Gaza into Israel. The cheering Gaza crowds when terror operations against Israeli civilians succeed, or that the Hamas leadership hides in underground bunkers while no money is spent to build shelters for the populace, but is diverted to dig tunnels meant to bring terrorist murderers into Israel." So, disproven, all right there. And like we always say, if the Palestinians or the Muslims or the Arabs want peace, they'll have it right away, because the Israelis are not initiating attacks.
There's so much out there that's just documented about how the Palestinians, in a lot of cases, or the terrorist organizations within that group, will purposefully put weapon stashes in schools or in other places that, you know, they know that if they get hit, they can use it for their propaganda. And for this guy to throw that stuff out there, this Dutch MP, that's just ignorant. I mean, the history is out there. It's well documented that they haven't gone out just on this like killing crusade. The Israelis haven't. They've been defending themselves against rocket attacks and every other thing. And like you say, the terror tunnels. And there's a whole book, many books, I'm sure, one I read in particular, just talking about how Hamas and those groups, they purposefully manipulate the rules of war and engagement that Israel goes far and beyond to implement correctly. You know, sending them text messages, "Hey, we're going to hit this area, evacuate," that type of thing. They do that all the time. And on the other side, Hamas definitely just manipulates it, and then people believe this stuff. And the other thing, too, about this is a lot of that's even being taught at some U.S. universities, which is ridiculous.
Right.
When the facts are out there, it's what's really happening in the Middle East. Israel's not the one starting any of this stuff.
There's just a massive propaganda campaign against Israel. The whole Arab world is pushing this out every single day, that the Israelis are just senseless murderers of all the Arab children, and that they are making life unbearable for the Palestinians. And when you think about the roots of this, Israel won its land, or it was given to them first, and then they won more land in response to Arab nations attacking them. And so they even conquered some of the Arab land. They have now even given some of it back, just because none of the Arab nations will take in the Palestinians, even though surely they would like to live in an Arab nation instead of a Jewish state. But now the Israelis are forced to deal with all these people. And even talking about the settlement issue, that's why a lot of people are upset. That's what this second article talks about. What Mr. Netanyahu said, I believe on Friday, was that some of these Arabs are looking for ethnic cleansing of the Jews by not allowing a single Jew to live in the Palestinian territories. Meanwhile, 2 million Arabs live in Jewish-controlled land in that state. So where is there any sort of equality there? Where is the fairness there? That is actually seen as a major obstacle to peace, the fact that Israel is building settlements in Palestinian territory where Jews can live.
Yeah.
The Arabs say, well, no, you can't have a single Jew in these lands. And then even when you look at different wars, Israeli hospitals, they treat the terrorists just like they would their own people. And they even give priority to the terrorists over their own people if those terrorists are more injured. They don't even see they don't see race. They don't see religion. They don't see extremism when it comes to caring for the enemy. Imagine a Jew being in a Muslim or an Arab hospital. How is that going to go?
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting too here, just the article that from the LA Times here, that the fact that the U.S. is slamming Netanyahu over this, it just shows that for a lot of the, at least the leadership, I would say, in the U.S., they are really anti-Israel. And we've seen that for years from Netanyahu being, like, thrown out the back door of the White House and things like that. And this just continues that same sort of thinking there, where we used to be, like was brought on the Trump Daily Show. I mean, we were very close for years and years and years, even not too long ago. We were very close. They were our closest ally in the Middle East. But that's all changed now. And this story from the LA Times just highlights that.
Yeah, and apparently earlier this year, Netanyahu finally retaliated and turned down a visit from President Obama. And everyone made a big deal about it. And it's like, he's been getting this kind of treatment for 7 or 8 years. So why are we just now noticing it when it goes the other way? What happened on Friday was that the Obama administration blasted some comments made by Benjamin Netanyahu. What he said on his Facebook page was that the Palestinian leadership actually demands a Palestinian state with one precondition: no Jews. There's a phrase for that. It's called ethnic cleansing. Now, Israel is trying to build around 100 or more settlements they already have in the West Bank for about 400,000 Jews, not 2 million like the number of Arabs in Jewish-controlled land, just 400,000. But remember, the Palestinians don't want to negotiate. They say not a single Jew can live on our side.
Isn't that so funny? Just how, if you look at, say, even what the U.S. is saying right now, and the U.S. has never been against immigration into the U.S., let's say. It's just the illegal immigration is the issue now. But if anybody comes out and says, well, we got to get a hold of this illegal immigration, they're branded as racist, right? Well, what about the Palestinians who are absolutely refusing to let any Jew come over there? We're going to support them? Like, that's the thing that's so bizarre about the really radical left mindset. They don't really support anything because it flip-flops depending on who you're talking about. You know, women's rights all day long. Well, until it comes to some of these other nations that clearly don't subscribe to that, or gay rights or transgender rights, and those other countries don't subscribe to that, but we support them, mm-hmm. or they support them against Israel. How does it work? I mean, even some people that are very much in that left side of things have even questioned that. Like, well, how do we deal with this? And they've gotten attacked. So it's really a strange sort of situation where it's like, okay, well, what's your agenda, though? I mean, if you believe something, well, okay, you believe it. But it changes all the time just depending on who you're talking to and what you're talking about. You can't really get a hold of what the thinking is there.
Yeah, it's a total irrational, illogical double standard when it comes to the left saying anything goes here, but we support all these nations where nothing goes over in the Middle East. Israel's really a beacon of light in that region. Try going anywhere else in the entire region and having freedom of religion, equality of the sexes, you know, freedom of expression. So many of the news sources in Israel are very critical of the Israeli state. Try being critical of Iran being in Iran. It just wouldn't happen. And yet, they're nothing like we are, and we try even harder to be friends with those Arab nations.
Yeah, I mean, really, if you want to get a hold of what the mindset is there from the radical left, it's really just one thing. Anything that's against traditional America, as people would view it, they're against that, pretty much against white males, and against the Bible.
Right.
And so it doesn't really matter what the arguments are, just as long as it's against that. And really specifically the Bible. Anything that's against God's law, they're for. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it comes down to. And that flip-flops depending on who they're talking to, how they would express it. But that's really the main point on all of it. And America Under Attack is a great book for the listeners if you haven't read that or gotten it. Very popular at thetrumpet.com. You can get it for free there, and it gets into why we see this betrayal of our normal allies, why we see things getting flipped around. It's hard to understand unless you read that booklet, America Under Attack.
Yeah, there is just a real trend of, a scary trend of lawlessness in this country like we've never seen before, and it's totally fine to just oppose everything we've ever stood for as a nation because apparently we've been the bad guys for all these hundreds of years. And even just the logic of thinking that there can be a two-state solution in Israel. Organizations like the Palestinian Liberation Organization, their logos have Arab-controlled Israel, the whole thing, not even just half of it. There is no negotiating with these people. These people indoctrinate their children from a very young age to hate the Jews and to say the Jews are the cause of all your problems, not your dictators who are, have been oppressing you for all these years. No, it's the Jews' fault somehow. And because they've been oppressing you, it's time to go attack them. It's just a crazy idea that we have, that we should be supporting these Arab nations that really they're living in the dark ages, basically, compared to almost the entire rest of the world.
When they hate the U.S. too, which is, we support them, but they hate us.
Yeah.
So it makes no sense. Unless you get back to what's talked about in America Under Attack. So you've got to get that book there at thetrumpet.com. It's free, and you can check that out. One other story today before we close. This ties in sort of, but this is more on the American front. LifeSet.com exclusive. Middle America hit with staggering immigration surge. Report shows 1 in 3 Americans now live in a county where at least 20% of adults are foreign-born. Let me say that again. The report shows 1 in 3 Americans now live in a county where at least 20% of adults are foreign-born. That's interesting. That's quite a surge. There's been, I forget, read the other day how many from Syria have been let into the U.S. It's quite a few, and I think they said it was, I forget what the percentage of was that was supposedly Christian, but it was minuscule.
Right. I think it's around 10,000 that President Obama pledged to bring in. I think he's just about hit that mark by now, if he hasn't already. And well over 9,000 are Muslims. There's a couple hundred maybe that are Christians.
They should go live in Palestine.
Yeah.
Why not? This report says in 1990, adult immigrants were hardly a factor in North Carolina's Randolph County, making up a little more than 1% of all residents 18 and older. So you think about North Carolina, that's not near a border, unless you count the ocean. By 2014, the adult immigration population had ballooned 948%. The 8,950 foreign-born adults that year were 6.1% of the entire county population. That is a 683% increase in the immigrant share of the county's adult population. We are not prepared for them, they say. We're being overrun by it. So this is out there in North Carolina as one example. They say among U.S. counties with a total population of at least 100,000 in 1990, only one, North Carolina's Robeson County, had a faster rise in the share of adults born in another country. Arnold Lanier, a county commissioner in Randolph, said the huge influx of foreign residents has strained social services and limited budgets. Well, of course it has. It's a lot of new people to take on, to take care of. We're not prepared for them, they said. Since 1990, the immigrant share of adults has more than quadrupled in 232 counties, which is, again, like they said, I mean, it's a lot of social services that they're going to need, at least for a time, and they don't have the funding for it even. The number of counties where immigrants made up at least 20% of the adult population jumped from 44 in 1990 to 152 in 2014. Immigration is impacting an ever larger proportion of Americans. In 1990, 1 in 8 Americans lived in a county where at least 20% of adults were immigrants. By 2014, that's 1 in 3 people, like the headline said, live in those type of counties. So pretty amazing, quite an influx of immigrants. They don't get into necessarily where they're coming from, legal or illegal. They don't give you those numbers, but a number I would assume would be on the illegal side, just considering it'd have to be. Just look at all the people that have come across. I mean, they're going somewhere, and they're filtering all throughout the United States.
And just think of the number who do end up going on government benefits. I think it's over 80% of the illegals, at least, who do somehow, and it compared to well under half of American citizens. So it is really a burden on the government to support these people. That's why we need to tighten up our borders, you know, just have some sort of common sense here in terms of our finances as a nation. But even today, there's no concern for balancing a budget and trying to only bring in maybe self-sufficient immigrants, people who have proven that they will support themselves instead of being supported.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, there's a lot of talk about the social justice side of it, I guess, or things like that. But there's a dollar and cents reality, too, that we just don't have the money to pay for those people in most cases. Here's a list of the counties that have the largest share of adults living there that have been born outside the U.S. Miami-Dade in Florida, 61.9% of the population is foreign-born, which is not surprising. I mean, the number is surprising. The fact that it's down there in Florida, I guess that is not that surprising. Queens, New York, 57.5% of the adult population not born in the U.S. Yeah, it impacts voting. It impacts, obviously, the social services. It impacts a lot of things.
Even assimilation.
Yeah.
If you're the majority there, why assimilate into the country? You can just be exactly whoever you were before you came to America. You don't have to consider yourself American first, or even, in a lot of cases, learn the language. A lot of people who come here don't bother to, because there's so many Spanish-speaking and other type of communities that speak their native language anyway.
Yeah, and what always happens in these situations is, you know, people flock together with others that are like them. And so if you've got this large a percentage of the population being foreign-born, they're going to break off into their groups. I mean, that's just the way it works. And so you really have kind of little communities forming within the other communities. Aleutians E. Borough, Arkansas, 55.5% Arkansas. So this, like I said, it's hitting different states than what, you know, we might think of. Hudson, New Jersey, 49.5%. Again, this is the share of adults born outside of the U.S. Maverick, Texas, 48.3%. Garza, Texas, 47.8%. That would be a little more, I think, we'd expect. Kings, New York, 46.6%. Santa Clara, California, 46.3%. Star, Texas, 45.4%, and Hudspeth, Texas, 45.2%. So those are, of course, the bigger shares, but they're spreading all throughout the country. And they made the point, too, that they typically follow. You know, if you get some that come in to a certain area, more are going to follow on their heels, because they've established a community, they've established some connection with people from wherever they came from, and they just keep coming to those areas, and that happens. So that's pretty amazing when you start having counties where more than half the population is not U.S. born. I mean, what happens there? Do good things happen there?
Probably not. I mean, it's hard to imagine a whole lot of good happening from that. It's nice when immigrants come and they share small parts of their culture, like maybe their different cuisines and different customs. But to consider yourself first a citizen of wherever you came from instead of a citizen of America, that is just going to cause division. And we see division today like never before along all these different lines. That's because America doesn't come first. And obviously, by extension, God doesn't come first either.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen that in these NFL protests, right? What about the greater good of the country coming before your personal pet peeve?
Right. It only matters if their race has been oppressed, supposedly. It's not about being Americans first.
Yeah. Can you imagine if everybody did that? We all have something that's bothered us at some point in life. And, you know, I'm going to take a stand for that time the dry cleaner didn't give me my suit back. Or, you know, I'm trying to think of something ridiculous.
Yeah,
but, I mean,
exactly.
We've all been bothered by something. And, of course, I know they'd say, well, their argument's much more serious. But a lot of people have serious arguments about things.
Mm-hmm.
But can you just stop the entire world and protest until everyone acknowledges you or something? I don't know. You know, it's like you say, it just doesn't put the greater good of the country first.
Yeah, and a lot of that argument comes down to, well, police somehow find a way not to shoot the whites when they are committing a crime, but they shoot the blacks. Well, that's probably not true either. But even then, both were criminals. Why are we all of a sudden so quick to rush to the aid of criminals who brought it upon themselves? Let's just talk about the communities in general. Let the police deal with criminals the way they need to be dealt with, and look at the communities, because that's where we're seeing a lot of issues, a lot of black-on-black crime, for instance.
Yeah, it's about keeping a law, and hopefully these different counties do have good law that's being kept. But again, when you have it's such a large population that's coming in, a lot of whom you don't know who they are or you can't track them, it makes makes things more difficult, and even financially, it makes things more difficult because you have to support them. So, as the U.S. becomes more diluted, there's less of a unity, I think. Kind of interesting report just to see the influx of the population there, and definitely changing times. The Key of David program is coming up on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as well. Also, a Music for Life program coming your way later today as well. That is a new episode also. Thanks for joining us today on Trumpet Radio Live. Myself, Floyd Falk, and Grant Turgeon. Have a great rest of your Monday, and we'll see you back here tomorrow.
Listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.